The little two-stroke motor snarling and sputtering like an angry badger. The yawl rocketed along the rails at a speed Christie never imagined it could attain. Paul had his conductor's cap crammed far down on his head to keep the wind of his passage from plucking it away. His goggles saved his eyes from being dried by the arid breeze and from the impacts of grit and bugs that bounced off like hail. His ponytail streamed behind him like a brown pennant worked through with gray threads. He hadn't known that his creation could attain such speeds, not for sure. Ryan Carter wasn't the only man in desperate pursuit of Magog that day. Paul had lied to Christie about his yawl's capabilities, but he did so, he told himself, to keep faith with her, with his promise to aid her as best he could, rather than to break it. Her intelligence was as remarkable as her beauty, but he had known from the instant of their meeting that her intelligence was far from in total control of her being. She had said as much often enough. She was bent utterly on her revenge. It tinged her judgment. Had she known that Paul could really crank the engine, well past the 15 miles per hour or so he ran it at on the flats, not to mention the 10 or less that he pushed the yawl upgrades, she would have insisted that he wind the throttle as far as it would go and dog it down. Which would, of course, have burned the engine out in a matter of miles, stranding them when wind, muscle, and downgrades all failed them. The time they would have lost on the brutal climb out of the plains toward Taos and their bed of high mountains alone would have lost them any time they had made up on the plains themselves, and then some. Magog would have been long gone across the sheer 1,000-foot-deep Grandee Gorge and away to Cali, to the fabled Great Redoubt. And at that point, he knew, far more than just Christie's quest would be doomed. He hadn't heard the arguments Christie made to his kinfolk by the bonfire the night before. Beyond telling her sorrowful tale, she hadn't spoken of her motivations to him, considering them plain enough. Saving the land from the tyranny of the general was for her a far secondary consideration, abstract at best, pallid and small, beside her need to chill him and the train that obsessed her as cruelly as it did Paul. If in taking her revenge she could spare the continent the risk that the mad, capricious general might conquer it, and certainly spread death and misery on a scale unprecedented since the Megacole itself, even if he failed, that was fine. Whatever the future might be like, she had no great desire to be part of it. Without Ryan, she would just coast along, deal with life as it was presented to her. But Paul understood perfectly well the threat that General Magog posed. That was why the mad act of attempted murder he had been driven to by the ecstasy induced by his first vision of the great train in the steel hadn't been repeated. He was torn by his love for the wondrous locomotive on the one hand, and on the other, his love of the freedom of the open roads and skies, and most of all the rails, and his love for Christie, inevitable as it was platonic. But choosing to defy his adoration of Magog didn't mean it had ended, nor even abated the least little bit. The vision of that perfect hurtling mass of metal drove him now, faster than he had ever been driven before. He would burn out the little engine, already crying out in its torment in a voice that tore his heart. He would sacrifice his beloved yawl. He would catch Magog. He had no illusions about somehow aiding Ryan and Christie. He hoped they succeeded, hoped against hope and logic. They might somehow be united this side of the last train for the coast. But as he had said and proved time and time again, he was no fighter. They would win or lose their heart's desire by their extraordinary skill and will. If he tried to help, he'd only be in the way. It was his own destiny that drew him through the bright morning as a giant magnet drew a tiny wisp of iron. Startled faces looked at Ryan. Hands reached for blasters. At least one alert sec man ducked beside the huge cylinder that dominated the center of the WAG to use its impenetrable metal mass as cover from which to shoot at the intruder. Ryan chucked a grin and slammed the door. He yanked the door open again and then made his way through past the crumpled bodies. He drew his Sig Sauer with his left hand. Crossing his arms, he lunged through into the next carriage. As he passed the doorway, he squeezed each trigger once. The shot coughed from the extended barrel of his Sig Sauer ricocheted off the steel bulkhead and fortunately missed him. The car's bullet hit a waiting sec man in the belly. Ryan squeezed off a quick three-round burst.
God damn!
Blood sprayed the left side of his face. A wounded man raised himself on the elbow of the arm that was trying to hold in his guts and aimed an M9 Beretta at Ryan with the other. The one-eyed man thrust out his left hand. A miss bounced screaming off the wall. Then an eye exploded in a splash of gore. The man's head slammed against the bulkhead, leaving a red smear, then slumped. Ryan heard sounds from the other side of the turret route. Purposeful sounds, not the agony-maddened thrashings of a wounded man. Moving slowly, Ryan slung the car, went to the gleaming steel cylinder, and flattened his back against it. As he did so, he drew a Gren from his pocket and prepped it. Then he leaned sideways and backhanded the Gren, banking it off the bulkhead now to his right to the cylinder's far side. At the same moment, a Gren came rolling along the runner by his left boot.
Fire blast!
He dove forward. The blast went up and out in an inverse cone, the direct force missing him. Tiny fragments of blast-shattered wire zinged through the air. Some bounced off the wall and struck him. Most were absorbed by the tail of his long, heavy coat. A few stung the backs of his calves through his faded jeans.
Shit.
Things were still clattering and creaking when he jumped to his feet. His right hand ripped his panga from its scabbard as he dashed clockwise around the turret route. He struck down to his right as he passed it. His unseen opponent had displayed the same presence of mind and quick reflexes he had in diving beneath the destructive fan of Ryan's Gren. But the Sec Man was a hair slower on the rise. The heavy panga struck him on the crown of the skull and split it open. No Sec Man remained functional on this upper deck. One sat with his back against the bulkhead, watching the blood pulsing out of the stub of his arm, as if he didn't find it particularly interesting. So far, so good, Ryan thought, but he wasn't exactly thinking his clearest. He was seasoned enough to recognize the fact. All he really knew was that he had to find Christy again, even if only to die in each other's arms. To do that, he had to get to the train's head as quickly as possible. That was where he would find Christy, or people who knew where she was. And then he'd tear all the parts off or out of whoever he had to find her. But it would be triple stoop to wade straight through the heaviest opposition. Individually, the trained sec men he'd encountered so far hadn't shown him that much, except maybe for the blaster whose brain pan he'd let air into with his big panga. But in the bad old real world, he knew, it took one lucky bullet or unlucky ricochet, and it didn't matter a spent casing how good you were. You were staring at the ceiling without seeing it. He wiped the brains off the panga on the back of the dead man's camo blouse. He sheathed the machete and doubled back toward the rear of the carriage. Time to get off this level. Downstairs were barracks. He blew in, with a car 4 ready in one hand and a Gren in the other. But the rows of bunks down either side of the passageway were empty. Something somewhat like a plan came to him. He began ripping OD blankets off the bunks, throwing them in heaps on the deck. He tore loose sheets and strewed them everywhere. For good measure, he dumped a few thin mattresses. Then he pulled a scabby butane lighter from his pocket and started setting everything on fire. It wasn't much of a fire. He seriously doubted it was going to do any damage to the armored wag structure, but there was a lot of it, and it made a lot of smoke. Fire was hard to ignore. He decided to share some with the next carriage forward. It proved to be an infirmary. Several green-smocked assistants looked up from unknowable chores with faces that were just big ovals of fearful surprise. He waved the wadded-up flaming blanket he clutched in his left hand.
Fire! Fire! Everybody, off the train! Fire!
The medtechies just stared at him. Steel hard and on a mission as he was, he wasn't quite up to slaughtering helpless healers. He wanted to trigger off a burst from the car 4 to get them headed in the right direction, but this car was armored too. It would be triple stoop of him to chill himself with his own ricochet.
What's the matter with you people? The train's on fire!
They still just gaped. He hurled the smoldering blanket at the nearest tech. She sidestepped. Two things happened at once. A slight, small woman in a white jacket emerged from a little cubicle office at the left front of the compartment, and a sec man came rushing in the far door with an M16 long blaster held at port arms. Ryan pushed the car out to arm's length and lit up the newcomer. The sec man dropped his black long blaster and held up his arms in a futile attempt to ward off the bullets that were tearing through his belly and chest. It just caused him holes in his arms. The car ran dry.
Shit.
In the sudden echoing silence, the riddled sec man sank down the door. The healer stampeded away from Ryan. One of them seized the woman in white by the arm, while she stood blinking with an expression more of sadness than terror, and dragged her out of the carriage past the body. The other two healers yanked open a door to the outside, and in blind panic, hurled themselves right off the train.
That's more like it. About fucking time.
45 seconds later, a gaggle of SEC men thundered into the medwag, waving long blasters. Finding the door still open and no one in the car, they charged ahead.
Fire!
They all crowded toward the burning barracks car, stumbling and grabbing fire extinguishers from brackets on the wall. A moment later, Ryan stepped back into the open doorway to the outside. He had been clinging to the door itself like a baby possum, with his panga in his teeth. Everybody was looking in the other direction. He sheathed the panga again, threw his hand blaster, and raced for the front of the giant rail wagon.